This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Christian Bush, and welcome to episode 2 of Geekin' Out, my new podcast. Every episode is a new person talking about what they're obsessed with that has nothing to do with their job. The only requirement is that they're totally geeking out on it and they want to talk about it. From beekeeping to craft beer, from 80s TV shows to custom printed tennis shoes, from remodeling Airstream trailers to collecting Game of Thrones bobbleheads. Tell me what you love, why you love it, how you got into it, and what makes it awesome. Every episode's presented in 3 chapters. Chapter 1, my guest and I talk about what they're obsessed with. Chapter 2 is a game I call Trajan, where my guest and I turn each other on to one thing that we've discovered. And Chapter 3 closes the show with me talking about music that I'm currently geeking out on and why. I believe that curiosity is contagious and that life is better with a soundtrack. So let's go. Chapter 1. Today I visit with Mr. Brian Fraser. Like the dry ground, waiting for the rain to fall down. Brian spent most of his life in the music business, first as a musician, then as a powerful record company executive, and now as an artist manager. I recently worked with him when I produced one of his artists, Lindsay L., who you just heard. In working with Brian, I was taken by his personality, his knowledge, and his excitement about the entire world around him. Also, it should be said that Brian is very tall. He's fit, with a full head of blonde hair, and has likely had to bend down to hug everyone in his life.
So I'm here with Brian Fraser. Hey.
Hey.
Welcome to the podcast.
I'm so happy to be here.
The podcast is currently happening in my home in Nashville.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, would you like to describe it for podcasters?
Sure. For listeners? I'm on the second floor, right near where the stairs come up from the entryway, and I'm looking at a wall of vinyl records, and I don't think there's one up there that came out before, Adamant and Ants, probably 1980? 80, Thriller was what, 82, 83? He was explaining to me how whoever comes in can rotate out whatever records they want to play, they just put new ones up every time.
Yeah.
And I think it's just such a great, fun concept and just awesome.
Thank you. It was a way for me to avoid decorating my place. So you've heard the rules of the podcast.
I was briefed on the rules by Whitney.
Okay, good. Whitney's here, actually, in the... Yeah, hi.
We love having Whitney around.
We want to talk about what you are totally geeking out on right now that is not your job. So first of all, you might want to just say what your job is. So the people can understand the distance
between
your job what you're going to pick.
Well, I mean, I'm currently in my third career. My first career was as a musician. My second one was as a record label guy. I was the vice president of promotion at B&A Records, which has since become Columbia Records Nashville under Sony Music. And I now am at Red Light Management, and I manage Lindsay L., and I co-manage Craig Morgan, and I do radio promotion and marketing for whoever else on the Red Light roster might need it in terms of country radio.
What are you geeking out on right now?
Well, I'm geeking out on jiu-jitsu, martial arts in general, Brazilian jiu-jitsu currently, but I have studied martial arts since I was 12 years old, and I'm 52. And it's something my brother and I started when we were kids. My father got us into it. I found out later his logic, which was incredibly sound for about as much of a redneck as you can get in West Virginia. He told me when we were older, he said, I knew if I could get you boys into the martial arts that you would always take care of your body and you'd always maintain a healthy lifestyle. If I could get you into this and you would fall in love with it, which both my brother and I did fall in love with. My brother actually has a school in Columbus, Ohio, and he's a very high-ranking black belt in the Chuck Norris system and like literally goes to Chuck's ranch in Houston.
Wait, hold on. What? The Chuck Norris system?
Yeah, it's UFAB, United Fighting Arts Federation of America, United Fighting Arts Federation. Chuck Norris's system is called Chung Kuk Do. And it is based on Tangsudo, which was a Korean martial art, and it's kind of like a Taekwondo. There's a lot of high kicking, a lot of punching, kicking, that kind of thing. And it's there originally was a big point karate circuit that both my brother and I did when we were younger. I fought in tournaments all right up until my mid 30s. I was always training for or fighting in some kind of tournament of some sort.
Did the Chuck Norris system come before the movies, or did the movies come
Well, here's the thing: a lot of people don't understand about Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris is the real deal, man. I mean, he was
doing that, and then got put into the movies because that's what he did.
He was a world champion, competitive karate fighter, and a kickboxer, and he was for real all the way around. And Bruce Lee picked him to be in the movie. I think it's Return of the Dragon. That he's in, and they have this fight in the Coliseum. And Bruce Lee had written the movie, and Bruce actually handpicked Chuck to play the guy, his opponent.
Was Chuck the bad guy?
Chuck was the bad guy in the movie.
Huh.
Right. So
okay.
So there's an incredible scene, and as a musician, you will love it. This is the thing about martial arts for me is, especially with jiu-jitsu, it's so many of the principles applied directly to music and your everyday life. And it's the principles and the concepts behind the techniques that work that make them work. And if you understand the principles of why something works, you can apply it all across all areas of your life. You can apply it in music. If you understand why this certain chord works over this harmonic structure or vice versa, then you can apply that in any key, right? Well, it's the same thing with a martial arts technique. If you understand it, you understand the principle of why it works, and you're practiced to a level that you can execute it, then you just create on the spot. It's a whole world of creation and immediacy that happens when you're actually doing it, So, but anyway, so back to the musician part with Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee. They had, at the end of Return of the Dragon, there's this, and I believe it's Return of the Dragon, there's the fight scene, the final climactic fight scene between Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris, the characters, and they're in the Roman Colosseum. They're in the Colosseum at Rome. And you see, you can see this develop. At first, Bruce, his character, is trying to fight the Chuck Norris style fight, and the music sounds a certain way. It's very stiff. It's very staunch. It's very, very. It's predictable. The music is predictable, right? And then, so Bruce takes a couple of shots, and then he realizes, I've got to fight my own way. If you know the concepts behind it, you can see the wheels turning in the movie. Because Bruce Lee directed this. He shot the whole thing. And when he starts realizing that he needs to fight his way, his own, and express himself his own way, the music changes to a tss, 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 And then it's a real improvisational kind of like funky jazz, like that early 70s progressive jazz kind of sound. It goes, the music changes to that, and Bruce just starts, he's stopping every punch, he's hitting it, and then you see him defeat Chuck, and he's upset that he has to kill him in the end because this was such a worthy opponent, you know. If you understand the philosophy behind this, it is incredible to understand.
Okay, this is great.
How you need to watch that movie, and even if you fast forward to the last like 10, 15 minutes to the Coliseum stuff, and watch that scene, understanding the concepts of how it was shot,
that
was at the time period in Bruce Lee's life when he had just written the philosophy, the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, and Jeet Kune Do was his style of martial arts that he developed. It's called way of the intercepting fist. And based on all this,
they all sound like movies.
Everything. I mean, there's been movies made. So, but it's the beautiful thing about Bruce's art, Jeet Kune Do, was that he took all of the things that he found practical and worked from all the different fighting systems. He took a boxing stance, where you put your hands in boxing stance. He took that from boxing. He took Filipino Kali, which is eskrima, stick fighting and knife fighting, and he applied that to empty hands so that you had trapping and joint locks that he brought from jiu-jitsu. And he studied with all the masters of these different things. He studied with Wally J, who was, when I first started taking jiu-jitsu, it was small circle jiu-jitsu, which is what Wally J was famous for. And that's small circle means using the smaller joint locks, like finger joint locks, wrist locks, being able to, if I'm going to lock out a finger, then I'm trying to describe it so people can understand my podcast.
But no,
if I grab my hand and I push on the top and I pull under the bottom and I create a small circle here, then I get right into the joint of it and it causes extreme pain. But it didn't break it. It doesn't hurt me. It just hurts me for a while so I can control the person, right? So let me have your hand. Just so you, and we're gonna take two fingers, okay. Right? So you can feel it.
I just filled out my insurance today.
Okay, you feel that?
Yeah, yeah.
You see the push, and here's the pull. So I'm here.
Oh yeah.
And I just
I'll do whatever you need.
You feel the pain, but now you're fine. You're okay.
Right, right, right.
You're not hurting anymore.
But you could move my body around.
I can make you do what I want you to do.
How many people that you work with on a day-to-day basis even have any idea that this is what you do?
None, really. I have never talked about it. This is the first time I've ever talked about it in any kind of forum bigger than one or two people.
Before we sat down today, mm-hmm. I did the least amount of research I could because mm-hmm. I wanted you to teach me.
That's the way to go.
Well, it's because I want to be just like my listeners, which are, you know, turn me on to it. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I did and the only thing I did was pull it up on Wikipedia. And mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu, am I saying it correctly?
Mm-hmm. Jiu-jitsu. Yeah, there's
and it seems like that's it's a family tree.
Yes, it's a huge tree. Huge
the branches
family.
Come off and the leaves come off the branches.
That's
stuff.
Right. That's
but
right.
Jiu-jitsu is originally about combat mm-hmm. against someone who is in armor
mm-hmm.
and may or may not have a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who is performing jiu-jitsu does not.
Yes.
It's close hand combat mm-hmm. for people who are armored.
Yes.
From someone who is not armored.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It's true combat jiu-jitsu. Now, my first black belt in jiu-jitsu is in combat jiu-jitsu. I'm a fourth degree black belt in combat jiu-jitsu. I'm a fourth degree black belt in Ishinryu karate. And I'm currently a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Combat jiu-jitsu is a kind of a Japanese style jiu-jitsu. And it was based off of, actually goes all the way to India. There are wrestling styles in India 2,500, 3,000 years ago that migrated into China and then migrated down into Japan. And the samurais developed jiu-jitsu as you would know it, as you read about it. They developed it because of the armor. So if you are striking somebody, and you're hitting armor, you're hitting a face mask, you're going to hurt yourself too. You can't strike against this armor. But the things that you can control are the joints of the wrist, the joints of the elbow, shoulder, the knees, the ankles, the hips. There's all kinds of different, where the body is flexible. So if somebody has on a suit of armor and they're wielding a sword or a bow and arrow or whatever, they still have to have the mechanics to bend their arms and swing them and all that stuff. So the joints are free. So that's why they developed this system of joint manipulation. That's when I say lock, I mean I'm locking your wrist out in a certain way that it causes you pain, and it either overextends the tendons, or it's the cartilage and stuff separates it in the joint. It turns your elbow or your wrist away that it's not supposed to go, and it causes the pain. Now you can break that if you move very fast. I can decide I want to go really fast, hit that really quick, and break it, pop it, because of the force, the momentum, and the angles on the wrist, or I can choose to hold that right at that point where it hurts really, really bad, and you will stop doing it. You know, I can kind of control what you do.
I love this because you're one of the kindest men I know, and I just had no idea. So what did it feel like to grow up knowing how to fight and really never having... Have you had to fight outside the...
It never was much competition. But here's the thing, man. After fighting so many tournaments in my early 30s and stuff, when I was competing against trained people, and then, you know, just, you know, little altercations and shit that happens when you're, you know, in your mid-20s and you're drunk in a bar and somebody does something ugly to a friend of yours, after you've done a few of those, you realize that you just feel like a freaking panther walking among gazelles. You're just allowing it to happen.
Just letting the bad behavior go.
Be cool, man. But what it does is it makes me, I don't get freaked out, it's helped me in business so much because I can stay calm. I don't get too worked up over anything, you know, in pressure situations, because you're always in pressure situations. And it's beautiful in when you're training. Like if I'm stressed about something and I go to work out and I'm rolling with a guy that is probably going to put me to sleep, or is like really, you know, these guys are so much better than me these days, and they're young, they're 20 years younger. And if I'm not focused on what's happening in the moment, then nothing's going to last very long. You know, they're going to kill me, right? So I have to pay attention. Well, what it does is it forces me to let go of everything else that's bothering me. So I spend an hour, hour and a half training hard, working on technique, sparring. And the beautiful thing about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, one of the reasons that it makes you so effective, is that you can train at almost full speed all the time and not get hurt, because it's wrestling, it's grappling, it's your body positioning. You're trying to work three and four moves ahead to get this guy to give you something you know you want three, four moves ahead. It's like chess, man. It's like human chess, you know? So it's so intellectual and it's so physical at the same time. I've never found anything that is its equal in terms of being intellectual and physical at the same time, with such intensity. So when you're done and you're just wasted and you're sitting there and your ass feels about like 30 pounds of chewed bubble gum, and you're just sitting there and you're like, oh my God, and you're kind of shaking because you've worked so hard, you're just completely relaxed. And I really believe that people need things that are hard in their life. They need things that they have to struggle to achieve in order to really know what that is and how it can relate to other parts. It'll make them better in every part of their life. I mean, man, you know, I've been struggling to learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on top of, I mean, I've studied martial arts for years, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a freaking mystery to me still. It's just baffling to me, and I've been doing it now for almost nine years. And at this age, you know, and it's one of those things that my body has to learn it. My sensitivity has to be developed to feel this move here and to think three moves ahead and to be able to do that. And that requires time on the mat. And I, you know, if I don't get the time on the mat, then I fall back and I have to start over, kind of have to rebuild again. But it's that struggle of learning it that is so fulfilling, because then when you start seeing results, it's like, man, you know, I did that. Because especially in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it either works or it doesn't. And nobody gives you anything. You are either respected on the mat because you work hard and you try hard. You don't need to win, but you need to work hard and you need to try hard. And if you are putting in the time and you're working hard, everybody there will support you and be and have your back at every turn, no matter what, because they know you're trying. You know, if you don't try, you don't stick around long. It's a really pure, true thing that you cannot
can't argue your way out of. There's no fake news.
You can't say I would have done this or I would have done that. It's all bullshit, and everybody knows it too.
Yeah.
It's either you either can do it or you can't. And if you can't do it, then you need to be working towards the ability to do it the right way or to find the truth in what you're doing. And I think that that has so much to do with life that it, that's what I love about it. It's just a beautiful thing to have. I mean, there's so few things in this world that we can count on that are absolutely true. Like, I know black and white truth when that stuff works and when it doesn't.
This episode is made possible by PwC. A robot may not be coming for your job, but competitors are coming for your market share. At PwC, we pair the right tech with the right solutions to help you gain a competitive edge. Reimagine operations from the cloud, fuel innovation with responsible AI, and detect risks before they become headlines. That's human-led and tech-powered. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Chapter 2. In every episode of Geekin' Out, I see if I can trade one thing I've discovered with one thing that my guest has discovered. A friendly exchange. I call it Trade Ya.
I'm going to trade you one thing that I've discovered. It just so happens I discovered it this past week. I came across pillows that are cold.
Oh, yeah. Dude,
stay cold pillows. Have you? I have been dreaming of this.
Let me tell you something, dude. I, for like 3 years ago, I went to a showcase during CRS that Big Machine put on, and the parting gift was this giant stay cold like pillow, but memory foam, but it's cold on one side pillow.
Yeah.
To this day, I fight my wife over that picture. Okay. That's my pillow.
So I've got something for you. They have, the technology has gone one step further. So it's no longer the gel pillow or the stay foam, the NASA pillow. It's now, here's this one. Here, I'm going to show you a picture of it. It's called a Hydralux Air, and it is a straight up feather pillow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it stays cold. And I don't know how it does it, but it has to do with pressure.
But it really works.
It really works. Like, you put your head on it, and I...
Do you have to do anything to prep it first?
No, I mean, nothing.
It's just a pillow.
No, I'm like, in my mind, you know, like, remember how we used to have to put the rice things in the microwave
and that
would heat
whatever,
them up? Or maybe the cold packs when you hurt yourself while you're jujitsuing, right? Is that because it's a verb? Yeah. And you would crack it and put it on your shoulder. This stuff, you literally lay on it and it gets cold. It is so important to me now that I'm thinking of replacing more than just one
You've
pillow.
You've got to send me a link to that so I can get one of those. That's amazing.
Hydralux Air is what it is. It's the one I tried.
Air. This sounds silly.
No, there's no such thing
as
silly.
It makes, I don't know. Do you ever spend any time on Pinterest?
You know what? When Pinterest first started, I tried Pinterest. And...
You do.
I do. I love it. I swear to God, I love Pinterest. There's so much cool guy stuff on there. There's like great motorcycles and just, and I will go down the rabbit hole. If I'm really just kind of want to veg out and I just want to kind of do dumb stuff, you know?
What are your searches? Like, I mean, I would tell you what mine is.
But here's the thing. It's weird because it's an intuitive website. And I know Pinterest is a thing that people know about it. I don't know. But for me, I've only in the last month or two become just enamored with it, but it's a you. it, after you've searched so many different things, it picks stuff for you and it just feeds you the things that you it thinks that you will like. And it's usually right? So right. It is so right with me. I'm like, and then I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh my God, if somebody saw my Pinterest page, what kind of person would they think I am? Because there's just all kinds. There's like survival gear on there. There's Jeep stuff. There's motorcycles or tattoos.
That's the one thing I do. I actually look for tattoos.
Because I've started working on this tattoo I've got going on here, this sleeve. I have three lions on my arm, and it's myself, my wife, and my son. And it's just about the connection between the three of us. And then it's the religious thing with the Trinity. And
did this come from Pinterest?
No, but I got the idea of putting the red overlay on the black from Pinterest. I found it. It's called Trash Polka Art Style. It was started in Germany. And if you look that up on Pinterest, there are the coolest tattoos. Trash Polka. TRASHPOLKA. Trash Polka. And you look that up on Pinterest, and there's just the coolest stuff.
I accept your trade because that's what I use Pinterest for, is to look for tattoos.
Well, look up Trash Polka, and you will see some of the coolest freaking tattoos you've ever seen in your life.
Well, thank you for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hearing about your life, and I now know a lot more about jiu-jitsu, and I will keep you near me in a bar.
Yeah, sounds good.
Chapter 3, The Clavinet. Because Brian Fraser was our guest today, I thought it would be appropriate to talk about a track from his artist Lindsay L's album that I love. I produced Lindsay's album, The Project, and I actually have the individual tracks here to her song Mint, and I'd like to use them to tell you about one of my favorite instruments, the clavinet. What is it? Well, it's a keyboard. It's a vintage keyboard that makes a unique sound. You probably know what it is because you've heard it play in your whole life at the beginning of Stevie Wonder's Superstition. The clavinet, or clav, while it looks and plays like a keyboard with white and black keys, the sound that comes from it is actually exactly like an electric guitar. That's because it actually has guitar strings in it. And it gets plucked, and every time the keystroke comes down, there's a pickup there, just like an electric guitar, so it can distort and feedback and do all the amazing tricks that a guitar player does. Why, you ask, would you put a clavinet, or in this case, many clavinets, on a song where the artist is such an amazing guitar player? Well, the answer is because it sounds so cool. Also, because it might make you dance. Here, let me pull up the tracks. Let's listen. The idea was, it was so groovy that we just had to have Brianna play clavinet kind of in the Stevie Wonder style. There it is in your left ear. And then that's a guitar in your right ear. And there's Lindsay in the middle playing lead. And then the whole band comes in. See how they all bounce off each other and make you kind of dance. And there, you see why we use a clavinet. Go out and pick up Lindsay L's album, The Project. Download it, stream it, buy it, give it to your friends. It makes great gifts. Also, thank me later. Because this lady is incredible. We will live like a Chris Benjamin, fresh off the print. Baby, we're timeless, like a classic song. It don't matter how long. We may scratch, we may weather, we may bend a bit. But our unconditional love's got one condition to it. Baby, it's... I hope you enjoyed this episode of Geekin' Out, and we are already hard at work on the next one. Are you obsessed with something amazing? Want to tell us about it? Write to us at geekingoutwithkb@gmail.com and you might be a guest on an upcoming episode. Come find out more about me and this podcast at christianbush.com. Christian with a K, people. Follow me at Christian Bush on Twitter, Christian Bush on Instagram, Christian Bush on Facebook, and Christian M. Bush on Snapchat. Thanks to Bobby Bones for the opportunity to make this podcast, Brandon Bush for making the soundtrack and assembling the pieces, Tom Tapley for audio wizardry, and Whitney Pastrick for being a great producer and making this whole thing possible. This is Christian Bush, geeking out. Thank you for listening.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
Ooh.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that!
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to the Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat, Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.